From multiple attempted locations in Minneapolis or near enough, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
For this week, in a first for the program, your nice hosts are going to revisit and expand a game from a previous Nice Games Jam. Will it work? We and you are about to find out. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Now we start now.
Start now.
Immediately, let's get into it.
Start okay. Making
Ellen, did you start the clock?
Oh, shoot. No, I didn't. Here we go.
So listeners who heard our Robustin episode, which I think isn't that many episodes ago now, but about three or four, we wanted to actually revisit it. Once we had the idea to revisit it, we wanted to get to it as quick as possible. But if you didn't hear that episode, it was a live version of Nice Games Jam that we did for 2DCon. Also, we helped raise some money for Able Gamers Charity, which was a lot of fun. For that one, we were in a time slot as part of this online convention. So we really were like limited to an hour, and we got it. I think we were like an hour or two, maybe. I think we might have bled a little bit. That was a lot of fun. This time, we still roughly an hour, but we don't have a clock this time. It's in that way more like a normal Nice Games Jam episode. But instead of a new prompt, Ellen's got the timer in front of us. Oh, that's very cruel, Ellen. She said it.
I thought you meant to start a timer.
57 minutes remaining, folks. unlike most Nice Games Jam episodes, we do not have a prompt. We are, in fact, just taking what we made at the last one, and we're going part two. Why are we doing that? What led us to make that decision?
That's a good question. I think...
Stephen, I thought you were prepared.
Never. Every time we do a Nice Games Jam, I think we're always like, oh man, this was a really cool game. I would love to like continue this. I want this to be a real game so I could play it.
Yeah.
This time we just decided to call our own bluffs, I guess. But like, I'm excited about this one too, because like, I think part of it, like, what's exciting about this is because we built it in such a condensed format than like we normally would have. It like led to a bunch of decisions. And I think that the game is compelling, with what we ended up having, but like, I think that there's a lot of ways we can refine it. And I think it would be interesting for us as part of it and listeners, listening to us, like to see what a part two, a refinement session looks like.
Yeah.
So at least for us. So I think it'll be cool.
I'm very curious if we end up, I mean, we'll know soon enough, but if we end up adding more, or if it's really more about refining what we had, I think we'll want to do both, but I am very curious where we'll end up. Ellen, do you want to tell listeners who maybe don't have time this very minute to go listen to that episode, or maybe need a refresher, what it is we ended up with last time?
Yeah. So we were, we were working on doing kind of like a card, kind of rapid card game. You play around a table with 3 to 8 people. And the idea is that you are kind of scientists and engineers collaboratively working on building a robot to help save a city or overcome some disaster. So we ended up with a few different decks that you'd be drawing from. A deck of robot parts, which you get to draw from to help build your robot. A deck of, like group objectives. This is the scenario that your robot needs to be able to overcome in order for the team to say that you were successful. And then one deck of secret player roles, because you can't just have a robot and then like have a situation that the robot has to overcome. You also have to have like secret evil scientist stuff. So
yes.
So the idea is that you'd have your limbs and your processors and your body cards for the robot parts, and everyone would see the shared scenario that you have to build and overcome. But the information that would stay secret from round to round, even as you reveal parts, is what's your secondary objective? And so to actually win a round of Robustin, you have to meet your player role, your individual player role's objective. And for many roles that we considered, that part of that objective was you have to beat the scenario. but not for everyone. Sometimes you might, like the saboteur, for example, wants to make the group fail their objectives. So there's a little bit of like hidden information going on.
Yeah.
And we try to keep it really simple because we had an hour. But I also just think that's kind of good practice when you're starting out with something like this. You want to test it a bit before you start adding stuff. So we kept it pretty simple, and now we're going to start refining, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ellen, you had a great observation in that episode, which is that we were coming up with these random ideas. Like, maybe we could try this, maybe we could try that. And that's normal and that's healthy. And it's good to write those down for later or whatever. But I think you described things in terms of dynamics and what was, as we were trying to get closer to a playtestable state, like what would be useful, a good use of our 10 minutes in that sense. And I thought that was a pretty good insight that applies to our very condensed game jams in general, but also full scale productions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we start, there's a couple of meta things we wanted to talk about.
Yeah. We got regular business.
Regular business, yeah. Minor business, but it's important stuff.
Yeah.
Wanted to keep you informed. Astral Gunners, who, you know what? The Saudi bros who are developing that game, they are local Minnesotans. But I don't think they've been on the show before.
I don't think so.
We should maybe try to get them on the show. At any rate, it's a locally developed shoot 'em up. That is out on early access on Steam. We'll put some links in the show notes for you, but yeah, you should check it out. It's fun. As a local shoot 'em up developer myself, I test for it.
It's been so fun to watch Fingence and Astral Gunners, two games that have superficial similarities, and the depth that they both go to, and in different ways, and how much fun it is to play both of them. And I'm sure it's been fun as the designers of one of those games to to talk with those guys and go back and forth and like share each other's learnings.
Yeah.
And like, this is a choice we're making. Well, we're not making that choice, but it's interesting. Like even that, like it gives you more, like it's interesting, like as a two pack. I really like these two games, and Astral Gunners is in a place now where you can get your hands on it now and see what we've been raving about.
Yeah, it's really cool. And also, there are some things, if you've seen or played Fingence, in the past, there are some things that like have been inspired from Astral Gunners, and I think there are some things in Astral Gunners that have been inspired from Fingence. Mm-hmm. Like, we build upon each other too because of that. It's really cool, yeah. So I highly recommend it. Check it out. Like I said, we'll put links in the show notes for you. With that news out of the way, let's get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like, in terms of how Roboston worked, I think that like what I really enjoyed about it was that there are ways, or the hidden cards that you have like influenced your play, but it's pretty easy to like hide your intentions.
With the
current system we have, like all the cards I made during the jam were kind of wacky, but they worked. It's easy to hide your intentions, but what I don't like about it is like, there's no way if you figure out that Ellen is the saboteur, there's nothing you can do to prevent Ellen from saboteuring, sabotaging.
I see. There's no mechanic by which you could use that information.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Currently, there's not.
So we should talk a little bit about how it is you can find that out. So when you have your deck of robot parts, everyone plays a card in a round. And then that helps assemble the robot. And the robot has limited amount of slots that you could put a limb or a brain or whatever. And we tried to be very simple and crude with what our categories. And we may want to expand upon that now. But each of those parts changes the overall stat of the robot. So it adds strength or it adds defense or it adds intelligence. Those are our three stats. Like, and it's independent of what type it is. So even though it's a brain, might not increase the intelligence stat as much as a limb might. And that's just because these are just numbers to us right now. It worked for the system we're working. But if I am the person who wants my secret objective is for the, as was the case when we play tested, that I want the robot to be the smartest. I want it to have the most intelligence. I want to play a card that has more intelligence on it. But if I play a card that has a lot of intelligence, but a lot more defense, say, then my goal is to add more intelligence, but you don't know that's why I played that card. And having those different stats, I think, was the reason for that. One of the things that Ellen's idea, which we weren't able to get to, but was in the episode, which is that we should have some negative numbers so that you can sneakily reduce a stat under the guise of raising another one. And that gives more opportunities for strategic play and more opportunities for suspicious behavior and more table talk, which is kind of nice. But what you're saying is that even with all of that, what happens when you figure it out or you think you've figured it out? What?
Yeah. Well, actually,
I don't think we have any systems for that, really.
We technically don't, but now that I think about it, because of the way that, like, you can only put certain number of parts onto your robot, that there is a system in place to deny people the ability to, like, put in influential or important parts for them. So, like, for example, Mark, you were saying that, like, or you brought up that, like, technically, intelligence, it doesn't matter where you put, it doesn't matter what part you put on there, it'll give you a certain amount of intelligence, but we can maybe make it so that, like, brain parts or processors or something, generally speaking, give you more intelligence than other parts do.
You know what it could be? To that end, but not necessarily make the head, and we need to have terminology for this, but the cards that the robot parts that go in the head space, we don't necessarily need to make those tend to have higher intelligence numbers. What we could say is that a card placed in that spot has a multiplier. So it could be that our cards could just be stats. And they could go in any slot.
Yeah.
So there's two choices you make. What stats you're giving the robot and where you're putting it. There's some more balance. So the idea then is that it might be a little harder to be sneaky in that case, right? Like I have a card that has 50 intelligence, but I put it in the arm slot, even though the arm has a 0.8 multiplier on intelligence, because how smart is an arm?
Right.
But that's still a high number, right? And that's a way for me to use most of the value of my card without necessarily revealing that's what I'm going for, because that card also has 10 attack, and I'm like, oh man, this is the only attack cards I have. Oh, sucks to be me. Like, and other players could fall for that, or they could not fall for that terrible attempt at subterfuge. that might be a way to do that.
That's interesting. I kind of like that idea. Yeah, and then as a you can deny your opponent by trying to fill up the head part, which gives you a times two multiplier and intelligence stuff.
And put no brains in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You put no brains in there. And so that it will deny, like, the scientists, the people who want the most intelligence, that opportunity.
Yeah.
It could work. It would feel pretty crappy if those get all filled up.
This has to be a system that's relatively robust, because it is extremely exploitable, just as I've described it. Whereas our previous system was that certain cards only worked in these certain parts, and that just but allowing anything to go anywhere means we have to have other systems to regulate that, right?
Yeah.
Or we have to have more slots. Like, we have to have, like, the head has 10 processor cores or whatever, and you don't have to fill them all or something like that. And that might be even beyond the scope of our second round here to actually develop something that robust. But
I think one thing to think about is if we do something like that where you are able to put any stat card into any slot, it does make it, I think, perhaps a little bit difficult to make the aesthetics part of that fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you're super right. It does just make everything numbers, which I'm usually not in favor of. So that's a problem that's introduced by this. The question is solving that problem worth whatever other benefit that a system like that can provide? Or is there some sort of half measure that doesn't feel like a half measure? Like, maybe an arm card, it's an arm card, but you could put it on the head, but at a cost of 50% of its stats. So it could be, you can come at it from the other way, you know?
Well, at any rate, that's an issue I have with it.
for sure.
It's difficult to, like, coordinate an attack.
Okay.
And, like, the way that, like, this is different from, like, Mafia, at least the way that we have it currently, in that, like, people who are of antagonizing positions do not know of there are other people who are of antagonizing positions. That makes sense. So, like, in Mafia, if you're the murderer and there are two other murderers, you know who the other murderers are. But in this game, you just get a role distributed to you. And, like, me and Ellen could be saboteurs, but we would not know that we were each other's saboteurs. Unless we figured it out.
Yeah, in my conception of it, I was thinking that there were all roles would be unique.
Oh, all of them would be unique. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we were playing the three of us, so that made a lot of sense there. But if it's like eight players, then yeah. I almost think that like the way this game would work is that in order for you to be able to support more players than we currently have roles, then we would need to design another role.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the box I would like to put around it, but I'm happy to hear otherwise because our game does not have an opinion on that right now, technically.
Yeah, we might need more stats in order to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine.
But then, yeah, so the what complexity are we adding? Additional roles and goals or teams?
Right. I think we should be careful about how many things we're changing at once, right?
Sure. So, oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, like we've put together like a, since we're all in different places and we don't really have a game, so it didn't really feel like, oh yeah, let's set up our session on Astral Tabletop and start rolling stuff.
Yeah.
We've put together a real sexy spreadsheet to help us kind of think through this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we got a couple things. We haven't tried the negative numbers for stats things yet to see how that works out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not really sure. I don't know. I think we should maybe like take a beat, fill out some ideas for some of the stuff that we have, and then play test it, and then figure out what we want to like, what variable, what new thing we want to introduce next.
Okay. So normally when we do a nice games jam, we are only ever able to play test once. But now we already have a game in front of us. So you want to just make the tiniest of tweaks and then get to a playtest is what you're thinking.
I think so, because I think it'll make it clear if we have like a fresh playtest in our minds.
Okay.
Yeah.
What we want to change next. And through the magic of audio editing, it can take like very little time to set up.
All right. So as Ellen was saying, we have a spreadsheet that we've put together our various cards. That have various stats, and so what we'll do is let's add those negative numbers, and then maybe we just run through it, and so it's really not that different, but it's just a bit of a refresher. Is that kind of a good place to start, do you think?
I think so.
Hey folks, Mark here from the future, editing this episode right now. At this point in the show, we stopped the tape, or rather we had planned to, and then we were going to just sort of put together the boring spreadsheet stuff that wouldn't be interesting for the episode. But we did, in fact, leave the recording running just for our own convenience. And listening to this section now, there's a couple pieces that are kind of interesting where we do some gameplay talk because, you know, we kind of can't help ourselves. So what I'm going to do for the next little montage here, I'm going to take out the most interesting bits based on my judgment, ones that are the least embarrassing to us as a team. And I'm going to just play them back to back for you before we get back into the episode and our first playtest of the second version of Robustin. So this all might seem out of context, but I hope it'll be sort of interesting and entertaining and will sort of inform your understanding of not just the game that we're making, but sort of our design thinking. So we'll see how it goes. Let us know. Nicegames.club/feedback.
Should we just like max of every maximum 5, minimum -3?
Sure. Yeah.
That's okay. Good.
Yeah. One of the things that actually it would be a change from last time is like there, it's like the psychology of big numbers, like 5 equals a small amount, 10 equals a medium amount, 30 is a big amount. And, but the difference between that and say 1, 2, and 3 is actually orders of magnitude. It's like a different curve for like what a high stat is. And so it actually does change the game a lot, but we have not done any kind of analysis to know what effect that does or doesn't have. So I'm okay with again, randomly picking numbers because it's not going to change anything, even though it will be different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. All right. So if there is 40 cards, then 20 of them will be limbs.
Oh, man. But I didn't come up with cool ideas for 40.
Well, 8 of them are tentacles. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. We'll just double it. That's fine. I have no idea whether these numbers are fair or a good idea.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's evenly distributed, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about the objectives.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
I know the first time we tried it, it was like, well, that was easy. I think it's also cool this isn't a spreadsheet because then, like, we can just copy it and change things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And have a record of all the different mechanics.
Yeah. That's a good point, actually. Where should we put stats that we're currently adding?
Oh, Mark.
What?
I don't like this way that the spreadsheet is. It's okay. I'll be okay. I'll be okay.
Okay.
I think your response of was exactly the right thing to say. Oh, this is... I should not have been given charge of the scenarios. I'm putting puns in now.
That's literally what we would want. Why do you think that's a bad thing? I don't understand.
I've been playing... I bought a whole bunch of, like, tiny card games a while back just to have, like, just, you know, sitting around, you need something to do.
Yeah.
And one of them was called Weird Alchemy, and it's just this tiny, like, one deck... not like slightly bigger than the playing card, like double the size, but basically like you and your fellow players are all alchemists, and your experiments are going wrong. And so you have to like pass your messes to the other alchemists to try to like blame the failed experiments on these other folks. It's pretty zany, but the art is amazing. And I kind of keep imagining this Robustin game as having a similar art style.
What was the name of this game?
Weird Alchemy. It's like a madcap game. You end up having like a bunch of people around, and you're just like throwing cards across the table. It's really fun.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Someday when we're allowed to be together in person again, we can play.
Yeah.
Okay, what else do we need here?
I put in where we could have the current stats of the robot in the section to the left of the robot parts deck. Oh, and then I made a list of the different roles that we can distribute those randomly to. So I'm not the warmonger again, or I might be. You won't know.
Okay, so I generated a random sets that would randomize the numbers 3, 2, and 1. So we will each get a roughly even number of body, head, and limb cards.
Okay,
so this is a randomizer as if the body, head, and limb decks were separate, and then we flip them out like this. If they were all mixed in, then it wouldn't work, like it wouldn't be so evenly distributed. But I accidentally did it this way, so it goes.
Okay, that's fine.
So, you know, Ellen is 1, I'm 2, Steven's 3, or whatever.
Sounds good. I'm the 3rd, after all.
And I think I entered this correct. Any mistakes I make, so it goes.
I think I will add, if I could add a rule to our game jam.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
If you draw a card that doesn't have a name, please add a name.
Yes.
Sounds good.
I like it. Oh, I keep clicking.
Ooh, conditional formatting, Mark. Yes.
I love conditional formatting.
It's very good.
It's my very favorite.
I'm glad we're recording this, because I feel like we should clip some of it into like like part of the episode.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, Mark here from the Edit Bay again. I swear I didn't realize that Ellen had already made this suggestion in our little outtake section here, but it makes a lot of sense because, like all good ideas, Ellen had it first.
I feel like I should add another scenario where, like, a wind farm goes crazy.
And attack?
Yeah.
Okay, the wind farm is farming humans! Ah!
Okay, so I'm blue.
Yeah.
And you're... Wait, no, you're blue.
No, you're blue.
Okay, I'm blue.
Are we ready to get back on air?
Yes.
I think so.
Okay. Okay, so, listeners, we have just gone into the time hole and entered a bunch of stuff in our spreadsheet. Mainly creating these cards. Because that was the challenge we set for ourselves when we did this last time, was like, oh, let's make 3 decks of cards. And luckily, we quickly came up with a strategy to make it work. But this time, we figured we've got the time hole. Let's use it. So we went away. We made a deck of 40 cards for robot parts. Ellen also put together the scenario pack. Did we get around to making the 3rd deck? Or
the rolls? The rolls? I used the same rolls from previously.
Okay. So good. We're good.
Just need to randomly generate them.
And we, in order to randomize these, so each card, and then we split it up. So we each have our own, we dealt the cards as well. So we each have our own deck of 13 to 14 cards, and they each have an equal number of body parts, head parts, and limb parts. So it's like they were like 3 decks, body, head, and limb, that were, you know, shuffled to all of us. Each of them have 3 stats, a defense stat, a attack stat, and an intelligence stat. And they each have fun names that Ellen mostly came up with, and then we filled in a couple extras at the end.
Yeah.
So that'll be great. And each scenario requires the robot totally to have a certain number of these kinds of stats. Ellen, do you want to describe maybe one or two of them, and then we can pick one at random?
For the scenarios?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got three scenarios to choose from. I was in the middle of making a fourth one, but it might be too scary for a podcast. So the first scenario that we might be facing is giant mutant tree attack. So it's not just a giant tree, it's also a mutant tree. Mm. And it's leafing downtown a total mess. The stats required to beat the giant mutant tree are offense 21, defense 16, and int 8, because it's a tree. It's probably not that smart.
Yeah.
No offense to trees, you know, it's not what they're known for.
Mm-hmm.
We have alien invasion. They're slimy and they have the wrong number of eyes. Stats required offense 13, defense 21, and int 16.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the third one is Bagger 388. Which is a giant real-life mining machine. This mining robot has gained sentience and is scooping up the suburbs. Stats needed, offense 13, defense 13, and intelligence 23.
Well, I don't consider that last one so much a problem worth my attention. So,
yeah, good point.
any of them are probably fine, Steven, which I guess we can pick one. I guess in this game, we would be randomly selecting one. But there's also some argument to be like, before you know what hands you have, what roles you have, it might be part of the mechanics for the team to pick a scenario, right?
Yeah.
And in our game currently, there's just these threshold stats that we need to get and fun flavor text. But perhaps in a fully developed game, there'd be more mechanics associated with each scenario that would make that choice interesting. Do we deal them out randomly? I don't know.
I guess for the purposes of what we're doing, we can just pick.
Yes,
I do think that like it could be. I think it would be more interesting and potentially like more accessible for people if we have objectives people could pick, because like we can make different objectives more with different difficulty levels. So people who are like really experienced with the game could have like harder stats to
get.
I like that.
Yeah.
Right. That justifies it as a mechanic, which I like a lot.
Yeah.
Cool.
At any rate, I think we should deal with this alien invasion thing because they're slimy and I don't like the number of eyes they have.
It's a vague number of eyes, but it's definitely wrong.
It's a little intolerant, but okay. All right. So this one's going to require offensive 13, defense 21, intelligence 16. Okay, so this is more of a batten down the hatches kind of battle. All right, so that's what we're trying to get. And each of these cards has modifiers for those three stats, ranging from -3 to +5. And we've randomly distributed them. And we used a website called random.org, which has a bunch of randomization tools that are really, really fun when you need to get a bunch of things quickly. And that's what we did for this purpose. So there's no balance game designery attention paid to what these numbers are. We're just testing the systems, which is sort of similar to what we did last time. We just have a little bit more materials in front of us now. And we've set out the hands in each or the deck that or the cards that are in each of ours hand. And we now have a roll deck, which we now need to pick rolls. And these were secret when we did them last time, but we were they were open secrets just for the purposes of our demo here. But there's three of us and three roles. So if we did distribute these randomly in a way that none of us could know what the other ones are, we'd only have one or the other in terms of the other players. Like,
ooh, can Dale just come in and tell us who we are?
Oh, wait. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna start the memory hole again. I'm gonna go run and get Dale, and then she can just text us, send us messages on Discord privately for each of us.
Yes.
All right.
That's brilliant.
I'm excited to play this.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so we have our roles deck. We have our three roles, and there's three of us. And
yes. Thank you, Dale.
Warmonger, scientist, and saboteur. Ellen, do you want to walk through what those roles are?
Warmonger. You need to, at the end of the scenario, you have to win by, one, completing the scenario. So you have to complete the objective. And that's a team goal. But then you also have to have built a bot that has more offense than any other stat value. So if you have those conditions at the end of the scenario, then the warmonger wins. The scientist is the same. Your team has to complete the objective and beat the baddie. But for the scientist to win, the second condition is the robot has to have more intelligence value than any other stat. And then the currently final role, I mean, I think the idea is eventually we'd have a lot more than this.
Yes.
But the third role that we're playing with for this playthrough is the saboteur, which is you want the team to lose the objective. Now, to Stephen's point earlier, we don't really have anything that happens when you if you figure something out. So we'll have to figure that out at some point. But
yeah, I think we can get started. The other thing that we haven't explained to listeners yet who are not familiar with the previous episode is that the way the turn orders go, which I can run through really quickly. Each turn, we each play a part to add to the robot, and the robot has a certain number of available slots. Each card is a limb, a body, or a head, and then has those stats. And the robot, as we've described it, and which, you know, maybe there'll be future robot mainframes, but here our robot can have four limbs or accessories, I guess, one body and one brain. So this game is going to go very quickly.
Yeah, make sure you have your die up just in case, like if we are competing for a head placement or something, you got to roll a die. Whoever gets the highest gets that placement.
Yeah, so we each pick a thing and then reveal what it or what type of body part it is, right?
Yep.
All right. So I'm taking a look at mine now and what and see if I can get my objectives going.
Well, I've got strategies. I've got plans.
All boy. I got to make sure I get the...
Oh, wait, hold on. In front of me. My plan's ruined already.
Already?
I looked at what I have and okay, we might be all right. We can salvage this.
Oof.
Well, I've got my first card
planned. I've got mine as well. Ellen, you've got yours picked?
Yes.
Okay, so here we would play them on the table and the type of card it is would be revealed on the back of the card. So we would all know what type of card we're playing. We wouldn't know the stats yet. Mine is a head card.
Mine is also a head card.
Mine's a body card.
Okay, dang. So Ellen's uncontested. So Ellen, you would flip over, I guess, what your body card is, and we would learn what its stats are.
So my body card has a name because some of ours already have names. It's called the Abs of Aggression. And... The stats are offense 5, defense -2, and int 0.
Okay. And then, Steven, you and I would have to flip a coin or roll a die.
Roll a die or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I rolled a 1.
I did 2.
We're going low. Oh, you did 2? Oh.
Yeah, nice try. Going low.
Yeah.
Are we going low?
No. Roll.
All right. Let's roll again.
All right.
I got a 6.
I got a 3. Oh.
Okay, so my card is the one that gets it. And we talked about in the previous episode, like what mechanisms we might have to resolve these differences. For now, a die roll works for us. So my card is, it's called the multi-core. It's a multi-core processor we're putting in the head. It has 0 offense, has 4 defense, so countering a little bit of what Ellen has done, and -3 intelligence. So it has very bad single-threaded performance. I don't know.
Okay.
Steven, by the way, is one of us keeping track of the total points this robot has?
I am.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I didn't think to ask that earlier. All right, so then Steven, you need to pick a new one. But here's a question about procedure. Like, is it like Steven loses the battle between us, but I revealed what my stats were? Is that a good thing? Yeah. Then Steven has more information to make his secondary choice? Because that's kind of a balancing mechanic, right? Like, you lost the battle on what slot to pick, but you get a little bit more information. Like, that's kind of interesting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. I mean, I don't have enough if I want to... I do have a lot of information.
Yeah, let's say Ellen and I both had, like, negative offense on both our cards, and you were the warmonger. You would then make sure that, now I'm definitely going for it, even if it reveals my position. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or is it better to, and that actually gives you some information that we were talking about, like this mechanic gives you a way to react.
Yeah, I suppose it does.
And it's a gimme for someone who loses the opportunity to pick the slot they wanted, you know?
Yeah, that means there needs to be a lot of more conflict then, if we want this to be the interaction factor, right? Like, maybe we can have a whole bunch of different kinds of parts. Like, maybe with their, we could split the limbs up into different kinds of.
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately, we would want noses. To have. Yeah, yeah. Like, vision core and, like, not just limbs, but, like, limbs. And then each limb has a certain number of, like, weapon slots or something. We could make it.
Yeah.
Not too complicated, yeah. But we could have it more. Yeah, yeah. But let's assume that's coming down the
line. I think we'll want to have it.
All right, Steven, what is your second choice?
So that's what I was going to ask. Do I get a second choice or do we just have to go to the next round and I just get no choice?
I think you do get a second choice.
Okay.
Because like, it feels...
I'm comfortable with me just losing my choice, to be perfectly honest.
But, really?
I mean, as a developer, I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
as a
player,
I'm like,
Well, you could play a whole game because then that means that some players will have a greater influence over the robot. But if that's the case, and I don't, as a mechanic, I like that too, but it means we have to do something better than a die roll. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
Some mechanic that's better than a die roll. Otherwise, I like you randomly lost the die roll. You then get the advantage of something else right now. I would like the idea of you picking a secondary thing.
Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense too, because the advantage is I know more information.
Yeah. Ellen, what do you
think? I didn't get the thing I wanted. Oh, yeah. Ellen, what do you think?
I think it works for a smaller number of players, but we'll have to be careful when we have, like, if we're saying it's going to support up to 8, that could end up taking something that's supposed to feel really fast and really slowing it down.
That's true. Yeah.
But let's, you know, for now, I think that we can just play where you get a second chance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, it might end up being overpowered too, right? Because it might be too much information. We don't know that yet.
Yeah.
You got to pick a limb because that's all that's left.
Yes, I will pick. I have my limb choice. Mm-hmm. It will be the Stomper.
Mm.
Yes, and it has a value of 1 in offense, -3 in defense, and 5 in intelligence.
Okay, so what is our current robot stats after the first round?
Okay, so we currently have +6 in offense, 0 in defense, and +2 in intelligence.
Okay.
So
oh boy.
We're not looking super great, especially since we need a lot of defense to complete this alien invasion thing and beat these aliens.
And there are 3 limb slots, and there's 3. So this is just one more round to make this happen.
Yep.
So these numbers aren't balanced, but that's fine. Well, let's assume that it's possible.
Yeah, for sure.
And let's go ahead and make our next round choice.
Yeah, I've got an option. I know what I'm doing. Wait, mm-hmm. Yes, I definitely do. We can do this. We just have to cooperate. Wait, can we do this? I don't actually. Well, it's fine. It'll be fine. I'm sure.
Okay, I've picked mine.
Okay.
I
picked mine too.
All right. They're all limbs. We know that much.
Mm-hmm.
And so mine is the pogo stick. And
that's great.
It has -1 offense, -2 defense.
Oh, no.
And 0 intelligence.
Oh, I wonder what role Mark is.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's the last round. It's time to put all our cards on the table, to use a phrase.
Okay, I picked the jet engine, which has +3 in offense,
mm-hmm.
+5 in defense, and 0 in intelligence.
Okay.
I have a concrete slab arm.
That's great.
It's offense 4, defense 3, and int 2.
Okay. So we ended up with what, Steven?
Offense 12, defense 6, intelligence 4. So not even close.
We were one away. So what we needed was offensive 13, defensive 21, which are way off them, and intelligence 16. So I know, Ellen, when you came up with those thresholds, you had nothing to base it on. So you had no idea what a good number was.
Yeah, well, and I realize now, like, we changed really 2 variables since the previous build. First, mm-hmm. I made these target numbers higher because of how our first playthrough went.
Mm-hmm.
But then also we introduced the negative numbers. And so that's why we ended up with what we did.
Right. Okay, so I think the one failure of the playthrough, the only one, is that two rounds doesn't give us a lot to work with. No. We needed it last time because we were time constrained and it was really like a proof of concept. Here, I think the questions we're trying to answer about how the players interrelate with each other, I think requires a little bit more, because after that first round, like, there was no reason for me to hide the fact that I was, as you may have guessed, dear listener, the saboteur. and so I just picked the one that gives you negative values. Although, interestingly, this is something that's up to the designer among us, Stephen, probably, who goes in on the official spreadsheet, which is I had a card that was negative, negative zero, like, which is not a, I can't trick anybody into thinking that's a valuable card.
Right.
One thing that could service that in terms of having more variety in these cards, and from a real game designer perspective, like actually being able to allow for randomizing them, is is having rather than targets, having ranges. So you don't want it to be too powerful or have too much defense or be too intelligent, because then it will, you know, rule over all of us. So that would be a way to make the designer's job a little easier, not having to go in and tweak every single stat on every single card, which might be a problem at scale.
Yeah, well, I think it might be a problem at scale, but at the other issue with that is a card like 00-3, and looking at the spreadsheet, like I see one that's like that, or -100, like you're just never going to choose to play that.
Oh, it's kind of, it's a dud in your hand.
I think that you might choose to play that even if you're not the saboteur, if like the warmongers are running away with the warmonger, I guess, is running away with it and has way too much offense.
Okay,
sabotage it and try to lower the amount of offense you have. Like if you're like way, like let's say that the objective is just like 4-4-4, you only need 4 stats at each thing.
Yeah.
Like that's super easy. And so like you're really competing so that your role wins. The saboteur is trying really hard to make it.
The whole thing tank, yeah.
But like, I think that like in that instance, you might want to play a card that has, you know, negative offense and positive intelligence if you're a scientist and you want to win.
Okay, I think that really actually I think solves my concern, because one of the things about like trying to trick the other players or be a little sneaky is not just that like I'm trying to convince you that I'm not the saboteur. Is I want you to think that what I'm doing is in service of a different goal. Not just not saboteur, because that's not a very effective lie. So having justifications for me to play negative values, and also meaning like this is a real great card for a saboteur, but I can't find a justification for playing it that wouldn't unmask me.
Right.
But other times you'd be really lucky. You'd be like, oh man, this one's got negative offense, and I know I could like totally play up, because we're really doing great on offense, so I could totally play up the fact that I'm the scientist. Even though I'm not. So all that's great. Okay. I love it. So now we need to have a game that can last more than two rounds.
I think we should just literally double the amount of parts that you can have for each thing.
Yeah. I think maybe even more than that, but
we could.
And I think we could maybe come up with a couple more rolls.
Okay.
Okay. So now we're going to have a creepy eight-limbed robot.
Yes. With two heads and two bodies.
But just the normal amount of eyes, right, Steven?
Oh, of course, of course. What do you think? We're some kind of an alien invading? Okay. Okay, so what other role options are there that we could give each other?
Well, there's no role. We have a role that maximizes offense, maximizes intelligence, but not one that maximizes defense.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm adding that
and
now.
Especially now that we have more roles than players, that is actually pretty useful to have.
Yeah. I guess there could be a role that's like you want everything to be even, the equalizer.
Right.
Well, that's
right.
Really tough.
Yeah.
Not like even, but like not
within three.
Within three, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want some balance, so that's good. And how difficult that would be based on how many opportunities you have, and how each of the cards, like it's not, you're rarely going to have a card that has like 0-0-3, and you need three more of that stat. You know what I mean? So that might be too difficult a role to play, but it's definitely worth trying.
Yeah.
And then, what do you say we have one more? That way, it's really we have no idea if any of the three original ones are in play.
The third one,
maybe the opposite of that, just an unbalanced robot. Thematically, I don't know what to call that, but like, say you what you if that way with the after round two, you see defense is running away with it. That's you just start pouring into defense. You don't care, and then and then that role maybe supersedes the as Ellen is now named the turtle. they win unless the gulf is so wide. That also means that if you think that player is in play, and I'm the turtle and I want high defense, suddenly I'm like, oh, but if I play this really high defense card, then it's so out of balance that if that other player is in play, they will win.
Yeah. I like that for the wild card factor.
Yeah.
Because then it's also like you can't figure out who, you know, I guess like who is, well, okay, but hold on. The way that the specialist works, won't that mean that the specialist and somebody else will also win? Is that okay?
I'm saying that there's a threshold. So, that the if the defense stat is highest, then the defense player wins, unless it's so high that it meets the standard of who we're now calling the specialist.
Okay.
Right. So if I'm
And if the specialist isn't in the game, then that doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So the defense player has a choice to make. Like, do I play this card and assure my victory, or do I play a different card to because do you know what I mean? This also adds some party game mechanics in the sense that there is now enough randomization in this that you have to make some intuition choices, which means that loss might not feel as it might not sting as much.
Yeah.
Playtesting would wide playtesting will have to determine if that's true or not.
Oh, of course. But yeah, that's a cool. I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, that's great. Then, like, if you're the warmonger, you're like, okay, I'll throw all of my stuff in there. But wait, the specialist might be in the game. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So Ellen has defined the generalist as all stats within 5 integers of each other. And the specialist as one stat is 7 plus greater than the next highest stat. Those feel like good starting numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think now that we have like double the number of parts, we'll be able to.
Yeah. And we'll be able to test the efficacy of this as a strategy, even if the numbers are way off. We'll still be able to test it out. All right. So we should.
We want to play with this? I think we've changed a lot of variables. The only other thing I could think of is like, what do we do if you can figure out someone else's role? But I don't know if we want to try that yet. I think maybe we just need to work on the numbers and the length of the round.
I agree with you. I think that is our biggest question. But I think that we need to try it. We need to run through it a couple more times as we make it a little bit more robust before we are able to answer that. So I'm totally with you.
Okay.
So we should head back and to ask Dale to give us new roles of these 6 now. We'll be back in a second.
You know, Dale's been really doing a good job on our Twitter recently. There's this one tweet that she posted that was about Spirit Fairy that I found really fascinating. Shriek Friends, I don't know who that is, but they tweeted something that was really interesting that Spiritfarer is super interesting from a game design point of view because like almost everything positive about the early parts become a negative part when executed at the scale of Spiritfarer. Which, I mean, it sounds like a negative thing for Spiritfarer, you know, at least this person's opinion was, but it made me think about like that, like games that are 5 hours long might not work at a scale of 200 hours, you know?
Yeah.
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 And those are the kind of interesting insights you can find on our Twitter. Ah,
hey. You
thought we were starting another episode. No.
You can follow us on Twitter at Nice Games Club. And you can find more insightful insights like that. Like, honestly, I'm still thinking about it now. So.
Yeah, Dale does a really excellent job curating not just like great insights from around the game dev universe, but also adorable cat pictures. That's like 20% by volume. And of course, news about the show itself. So you want to learn about more what we're up to and engage with us directly. But a big part of it is like serving as what the show does, which is just to be a place where you can learn more about indie game development and learn what other people are doing. And like Steven was saying, new thoughts and new ideas and get you started on your own journey. And so I think it's a great resource on its own. And a great way to connect with us at the show.
You can follow that link at Nice Games.
Tweet, tweet.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an Orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, so Dale has sent us each a roll from our now six available rolls, and none of us know what the others have. And so this is, I think this is going to change the game quite a bit in a way that is true. It's truer to what we wanted it to be the whole time. So we're not really making any changes. We're just sort of like implementing a lot of our ideas that we've had already. So we're still at that point, which is a fun thing about being able to do a part two. So we're excited about that. All right. Yeah. So what is our scenario? I see, Ellen, you have added a fourth scenario.
I did. Please don't use this against me. I really am creeped out by wind turbines. Like the really amazing source of green energy that I think we should build more of. I just hate looking at them and driving by them and thinking about them. So I turned that into our fourth scary scenario of weaponized wind turbine. Green, scary energy.
That sounds like a Ray endorsement. I feel like we should just do that one.
Mm-hmm. This one requires offensive 15, defensive 15, and intelligence 15. So this is an all-around threat, which is actually kind of a good prototype-y, playtest-y test case for us because all of our roles want different outcomes, right?
Right.
So, all right. We're going to use the same deck of cards and the same randomly distributed one because we're pretty sure we didn't memorize the ones we had.
Nope.
Yes.
I mean, we don't have to reveal that, but I think that's important when you're like trying to playtest quickly. Is like you don't always have to reshuffle the deck, like if you don't, you know, at least not in the way that we're forcing ourselves to, which is sort of complicated and involves a shared spreadsheet. Yeah. But again, we have two head parts, two body parts, and eight limb parts, so we're going to be able to do a couple extra rounds here. All right, let's pick our first card.
I've got mine. I think. Wait, is there a better one? No, this one's good. This one's good. It's a good card, I swear, y'all. Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I am also ready.
Okay, cool.
All right.
So,
what type of card
do you want to start? Okay, I'll start. I have a head card.
I have a body card.
Okay.
I also have a body card.
Okay. Ah, one of the things obvious is even though we do have multiple slots, but there does seem to be an instinct to fill those slots quickly.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have now. There are no more body slots. We each get it. There's no conflict here.
Right.
So let's go ahead and reveal our cards. Ellen, why don't you go first?
So I have a spiky body card. It has offense 2, defense 4, and int 2.
Okay. And Steven, you're keeping track of this still?
I am, yep.
My body card is an oak barrel.
Okay.
I mean, takes all parts.
That's great.
It has offensive 3, okay. Defensive 2, and intelligence 5.
It's a
hardy oak barrel.
Cool. Okay, and so mine was the head part, and I picked the algorithmic head. It's just powered by math. It's got an offense of 5, a defense of 0, and intelligence of -1.
Okay, so we're doing pretty good. We're getting close to that 15 on all of our stats. Close-ish. We're making waves.
Yeah.
And remember, that's what we're all trying to do here. Is
Right. Yes. Of
course, no saboteurs among us, right?
No.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like, do y'all have ideas on who's who? I mean, I know who I am, but I don't.
I think part of the problem is our the way we're doing this. Is when you say what type of you have, and then you say the stats. I'm not really retaining that in my mind.
Yeah.
Whereas if I saw it flipped over as a card on a table, I think I might have a better job. So we need to be mindful of how our environment here is shaping this. This also slows the game down quite a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't know, like, I already don't know what your stats were for each of the cards.
That's true. Well, I mean, I'm doing a little bit of deduction based off of the card, because I know what card I use.
Yeah.
But I don't know what card other, I don't exactly remember what other cards other people use.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I think about it, I kind of remember what you put, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
So I can conclude what Ellen put. But that does not give me enough information to determine what the role is.
This is a case where when we reveal the moment we reveal it is kind of where everyone can do a little table talk. So, for example, mine has positive stats in all three. So, so certainly, regardless of what role I had, I can certainly play it up in any way. I could I could say like, oh, well, mine has a 5 intelligence, but it also has 3 offense and and that's the highest offensive body I have. And there are a few slots in body. So I can lean into the fact that I'm revealing to you that I'm the warmonger if I want you to think that, and or I could play it up if I want you to think I don't want you to think. It's all the same nonsense, lies and duplicity for all kinds of bluffing games can come and play here. But it seems like we're not really giving ourselves the natural spaces that would happen.
That's true.
The way we're doing this. But that's okay. That's okay. It doesn't mess it up totally. But I feel like that would probably happen more there. But I'm not really retaining. I'm not able to make those deductions, or I'm not keeping mindful of that myself.
Sure. But nothing. It's not concrete at all. Shall we pick our next parts?
Yeah.
We've got one head part left and then the rest are limbs. So keep that in mind, I suppose, while you're picking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. What do I want to pick? Actually, that's a pretty decent one. I've got an option.
All right, I'm good to go.
I am as well.
Okay. I would like to place a limb card.
Okay.
Me too.
Oh, well, then the head is mine, I guess.
Ooh, all right, all right.
Ooh.
We're all being very deferential.
Yeah.
Honestly, I picked a head card because I wanted the second chance.
Oh, yeah. Oh, ooh. I like that. That's clever.
Right? Because none of my head cards are that great. And so I was like, well... And actually, this is a thing we hadn't talked about, is in the case of a conflict, what happens to the card you pick? Does it get discarded?
Oh, yeah.
Because then that's motivation to not contest a rare slot.
Yeah. I guess if it gets contested, it can't get placed down regardless, right? So it effectively is discarded.
Right, but does it go back into your hand?
Yeah, you could put it again. If you have 2 head part slots and you take the same card out and play it in both rounds.
Oh, no, but Steven is
right.
Well,
no, it wouldn't.
Once it can't be played, it just can't be played anymore regardless.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So that's the case regardless. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, mine is a head card.
Yes.
And so Ellen's, yours was also a limb card?
Yes, mine was also a limb card. It's, again, the concrete slab arm.
Uh-huh.
Your favorite. What is that? What's the stats on that one?
Offense 4, defense 3, int 2.
Okay.
It's a really good arm.
It is.
It doesn't look like much. It's just a big old concrete slab.
Mm-hmm. My head card is the cone head. I don't know what that means for this robot, but it looks nice. Plus 1 offense, negative 3 defense, and nice. You're going to have to believe me. It's my only option.
Okay.
I didn't think I'd be playing this card.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
And plus 4 intelligence, so that's something. We're getting closer to the goal on that one.
Okay. Well, we've reached the goal on offense so far. Unless my card says otherwise. I remember what I picked now. I picked a tentacle arm.
Mm-hmm.
Or can you call it an arm if it's a tentacle?
A tentacle limb.
Yeah. Tentacle limb, yes. It's got plus 3 in offense, plus 1 in defense, and minus 1 in intelligence.
Okay.
So, Well, now you made a big stint of it, Mark. I'm curious. I don't know what you're trying to do. What are you trying to pull?
I don't know, man. I'm just trying to get this robot up to 15, 15, 15. That's my primary goal, as it should be yours.
Right. Of course.
So we all need to pour into defense. And here's the thing about having multiple rounds is that you are able to set aside your secondary goal, right? You could be motivated to do it. Whereas with the 2 rounds we were playing earlier, it feels like even though you might think, well, we're going to fail this as a team, like you still, in my mind anyway, I was only ever going for my secondary goal. But now I feel much more like let's focus on the stats first, or the objective first. All right, so we're 15-7-14, so we're doing okay, but we need to get that defense up, so let's head over to round three.
Ooh, cool. Round three.
All right, I know what I'm picking.
Okay.
I got mine too.
Oh, mine's kind of tough with what I got in front of me. I'm going to do some thinking.
All right.
Good. That's good.
Man, for listeners, when you come back to this episode later, you'll be like, oh, of course Mark was thinking at this point. It'll be great.
I do actually, this would be a really, I mean, we did a video episode last time, and we had a lot of really good visual props. But I think, I think, I'm not sure how much of me thinking at this point is that useful, even on a second listen, because people don't really know what I'm looking at or what I'm deciding between. So apologies to listeners. I may or may not edit part of this out. Who's to say? All right, I'm going for it. I picked one.
All right.
And it's a limb like they all are. Yes. Steven, you want to reveal yours first?
Yeah, sure. I have picked a jet engine limb. I don't know that I named that one, but it's a great name for a limb. It's offense 3, defense 5, intelligence 0.
Okay. Ellen, you want to go next? Or you want me to go next?
Sure. I actually have a matching jet engine.
Oh!
So our robot has 2 jet engine limbs. That's this amazing. Jet engine has different stats. It must have come from a different plane or something. offense 1, defense 2, int 1.
Okay.
All right. Mine is a fat tire. I don't know what you meant by that, Ellen. I guess just, it's a wheel and it's huge.
It's a big rubbery fat tire.
0 offense. Sadly, only 1 defense. But happily, 5 intelligence.
Okay. Okay, so we're like rolling off with this with the goals here.
So we have now met everything. We've now met our goal. So, and this is the last round.
Yes.
Coming up.
So I think we've just discovered that we have to have a rule here, which is you have to fill up all the robot slots.
Oh yeah, you know? we never established that, but yes,
that's true. Yeah. Rule. And with multiple players and multiple combination, like there's, you know, we divide evenly into the robot parts, our cards and rounds, but that isn't always going to be the case. And presumably, our conflict resolution system will account for that. But who's to say? We don't need to worry about that just yet.
We can also have like starting player rotator on the table, so
yes,
we can figure that stuff out as we play more.
Yeah.
Okay, final round.
Yes,
almost.
All right, this is I'm actually presented with a really interesting choice here.
Oh, yeah, I'm still thinking. I don't know.
I've picked mine.
I've picked mine.
I think I've picked mine. Yeah, I've picked mine.
All right. All limbs again. I'll go first this time.
Sounds good.
And it's a risk. I picked the insectoid limb, which has -1 attack.
Oh, my.
Which we can afford to lose.
Yes.
Unfortunately, also -1 defense, which brings us one below the thing. So this is my gamble. I'm gambling that you guys have positive. Or didn't also make the same bet I did. And then intelligence +3.
Okay.
We have to play, like, we've picked one, right? I know we're in Excel right now.
Yes.
But yeah, like, we can't just swap, right?
No.
No. Yeah, okay. Well, I'll go next. You're not going to like my decision. I picked the stomper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like stomping, I guess, still. It has a +1 in offense, but a -2 in defense.
No!
And a +5 in intelligence.
This is why I went first, so I don't get the blame.
Yeah.
I should have gone first.
Oh, well.
Don't tell me you went down in defense, too. Really?
I don't know if I hurt, but I'm certainly not going to help.
Okay.
So I also had the fat tire, but it was a different fat tire. This one had -2 offense.
Ooh, that brings
0
us...
defense.
Oh, no.
And 1 int. No.
Okay, okay.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Okay. So
where did we land, Steven?
All right. He got 17 in offense, 12 in defense, and 29 in intelligence.
Okay. So not great.
Yeah.
So we failed. The turbine took us down. It blew us away.
Yep. And just as Ellen predicted.
So, as was fairly obvious, I was the scientist. Yeah. I wanted the highest intelligence. Steven, what role were you?
I was the specialist, so I also wanted the highest intelligence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Well, okay, so it's fascinating too, because like I originally was trying to pump all of my stuff in offense because I had better cards for that.
Yeah.
But then intelligence took it away because I guess y'all had really cards for that.
So well, I had like, five well, last round on it, so yeah. it bumped it up. Yeah, that was my best play there. And yeah. Then, so Ellen, what were you?
I was the turtle.
Okay.
Okay.
So you wanted the most defense, and yet you didn't give us any defense in the clutch round.
Well, the last this is interesting, 'cause the last round, like, I didn't really have many high defense cards to play on limbs, and the highest defense card I had was a head, but it was also negative in both other values, so it just didn't feel like the thing I wanted to play early on. I don't know. Yeah, so definitely like the gaminess of it and trying to figure out when to play which cards kind of constrained me in what I wanted to play.
Yeah.
To my ultimate detriment, because defense is the lowest stat.
Yeah.
That we have in our robot.
If we had met the defense stat, like if we had gotten to 15, then by the rules, Steven would have won, because intelligence was 11 higher than the next highest stat. So that's something I didn't really think about when I was going for intelligence. In that previous round, the one before the previous, offense and intelligence were similar. It was like 18, 19 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And offense was a little higher. And so I was like, okay, I have this 5 intelligence. If I don't play it now, then there's a huge risk I won't get it. So I have to play this now. And then intelligence was ahead. And then at that point, it's like, okay, now it's the final round. Intelligence is ahead, but not by much. And there's a number of 5 cards out there. So I chose to protect the lead and hoping that no one would, and just -1 defense would took us below the line. And I just gambled that there was no saboteur. And so that everyone would be motivated to keep that, or rather they'd be more motivated to do the right thing than I was. But a smarter play would have been like, I really should have held off because it was a greater risk that, the specialist was as much a risk to me as say the warmonger.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't have a lot of information to know. It's really just guessing. That's the party game part of it. And I kind of think there's part of me that wants to come up with like systems to like be able to deduce. But part of me wants to like leave it totally to chance so that at the end it's like, oh, I guessed wrong.
Well, this feels like poker right now. Okay. Not in a bad way either. Like it feels good. Like it's like, but it's different from, it's not a, I guess the way that people describe what I call lying games is a social deduction game.
Yeah.
Cause like you're supposed to be lying a bunch, in those, but in this game, there's not a lot of incentive to lie. You kind of just put cards down.
Yes.
And you can use the information Mark, if I had realized that you were the scientist, I didn't realize that you didn't realize that I was the specialist.
Right.
I could have leaned into you being scientists and just made sure that we succeeded and just put a little bit into defense. But I was like, oh, I also need to pump more stuff into intelligence because I don't know enough about people's roles. So I need to make sure that intelligence is higher than offense by at least 7.
Yeah, right. That you get a lot of you get a lot of benefit from knowing a warmonger or turtle or scientist if they are doing well, because then you can latch on to that. If you don't know that, then the risk is you could waste a couple turns on the wrong stat because maybe no one's going for offensive. It just happened to be the offensive bounce stuff. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I will say that, and listeners who do go back and if they are interested in hearing how we played it and maybe now knowing the roles we had, I did make an effort to make all of my cards were like max intelligence. I made an effort to like draw attention away from that. And I don't know how good a job I did or how good a job I needed to do, because this environment does not provide, like we talked about before, doesn't provide opportunity.
Yeah.
But like, but it is true that my opportunities to pick certain like my other body types would be so negative to my secondary goal and also not that great for the primary goal. So it is kind of interesting, is like, am I in a position where I have to not lie, but there's like the diplomacy of it. Like say like, okay, my 3-2-5 is all positive, the oak barrel or whatever. But like the five is the headline feature. So can I convince you that I didn't pick it for that reason? And do I need to convince you that I didn't pick it for that reason? I think it's the negative numbers you have to justify in table talk, right?
Yeah. Especially if it keeps you from winning.
Yes, yes. Like, and with the saboteur not a guaranteed player, that actually makes it easier to believe someone just by playing any negative number is not trying to mess up the team.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Ellen, what was going through your head when you were making decisions on your cards?
Well, I just didn't have a lot to pick from. I think, you know, and that might be something that we can play around with in the draw phase, kind of when you're like dealing cards or something like that. I had a high defense body that I, you know, played, I think.
Yeah.
And I had this high defense head that I didn't get a chance to play. But then like the defense stats in the arms or the limbs that I had just weren't anything special. So I think I just didn't do a great analysis of what my deck was to try to win, I guess. But it didn't feel bad. It just, you know.
Yeah.
It's so fast that it does feel a lot more like poker. It's so fast that it's like, okay, well, I'll try again on the next hand.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I think that's what I come away from this is like, we need more hands, more chances to put cards down.
Yeah. Because
then you can make more conclusions and there's more time to make conclusions and strategize based off of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the risk there is that I don't love the idea of like so many turns that I want to think about planning a three-turn strategy. Because one of the things I do kind of like, and I think that there's problems with this, but I like that which card to pick, like there isn't a lot of choice paralysis in this game. I think we all sort of talked about like, which one? But I never felt like it was that hard ultimately to pick one. It felt like there was some, also there wasn't an obvious pick, which is a real risk for a game like this, is just making a system where the right answer is obvious. I like that a lot. I think we did a really good job there. But I also like the balance where there's enough that's different, unique about your combination of cards that you can kind of come to, this is the best choice, but if this and this is true, then this is the best choice. And not knowing the answer to that is a little bit tricky, and you have to sort of, you know, pull the lever or throw the die or whatever other gambling metaphor. But like, it hasn't, at least to me, felt like so hard to decide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's good.
But if there were multiple many turns, and I want to be like, I'm going to play this card, then I have more strategies. So if my secondary strategy, I want high intelligence, or I'm looking at the robot right now and I want to improve the overall goal. We're really down on defense and I want to win on defense because I want us to win overall. So I'll not play this intelligence card. I'll play that. If I have other options, like I could play for my primary goal, secondary goal, or I could do a sneaky move, or I could do a counter move, I can do any of those things in my turn, then the choice becomes harder.
Right.
Right. But if my choices are just two of those things and not the same every time, but it could be that, defense is too, or offense is too high and I have a -2 offense and I'll play that because it also has a +1 intelligence instead of my +3 intelligence or something. You know what I mean? I'll play a counter move instead of a secondary move or whatever.
Yeah.
That's still two choices. And so I'm that's my whole deal. I don't want it to get too long.
I agree. I don't want it to get too long either. And I agree that like adding too much planning would not be good because then like you're not playing it like poker. You're playing it like, well, there's a little bit of risk involved, but like,
yeah,
you wouldn't be playing it like poker, I guess.
Yeah.
If you're doing too much planning. So I don't know. I do think that like a little bit of length would be good, but maybe we can add some form of randomness outside of the different players to make it feel even more like poker. I don't know.
Yeah.
kind of leaning into the poker idea.
I think that kind of brings me to like, well, what would we try next? And I feel like the thing that I'd want to play test next is, you know, what it feels like to maybe play around a table. So like put it into Tabletop Simulator or something like that. Yeah. but also figure out a way to score. Like, so I feel like that this game is like a game where you do rounds and each mm-hmm. scenario is a round, mm-hmm. but you win the game by meeting some condition or something at the end of X number of rounds.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And the other issue is like making sure the primary goal stays the primary goal. Because even if the game says we lost, I still kind of feel like I won. Like,
yeah.
And to motivate that, and maybe that's a case of like, you can't do a certain thing until the primary goal is reached or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, listener, we just had a, what would you call it? A 27 hour break from the end of our last recording.
Yes.
Or something. Because something came up.
The song.
Yeah, something came up. And so we're actually getting back to it. We just listened back to the last minute of what we were talking about. Yeah. Ellen, where were we?
Why me? we literally just went over this 2 minutes ago and I'm panicking. Like, I don't remember.
I think we were talking about what we would try to figure out in our future playtest sessions.
Yeah, I think so. We've all kind of, you know, bounced around ideas and reactions to play or jam session number two. And I think we all kind of want to keep going with this, but it doesn't really make sense to keep going with it in Excel. So I think the last thing we mentioned yesterday was maybe putting it in Tabletop Simulator. And I still feel pretty good about that as a next step.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Cause we identified a couple of things that would make it hard to learn what we need to learn about it now. In its prototypey form. Now it's just one prototypey is the next step we need to get to. So that's good. So the other thing is we have the big question to answer, which we sort of posited at the start of this, which was like, how do we get players to react or give them tools to make fun the learning of what other people's roles are? Right.
Right.
And yeah. I think I don't know, because of the way we were looking at or playing our second run through just now, that that we still have it hard to even deduce what the other players are. So I'm not sure how equipped we are to even answer the question still after these two run throughs. But I'd like to chat about it before we end the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, cause I think while we were playing it, I was getting an inkling of like that counterplay, because I was trying to figure out who you were, Mark, and trying to play around that.
Mm-hmm.
And like the idea of playing around who you are, what your role is, was really cool. And I don't know that every role like fits that. The role I was, you know, I was the specialist. So like I was trying to make sure that I had more than everybody else, or I had such a great amount of points that like I would, you know, win from that. Mm-hmm. And so like I felt like there was some interplay between like, I was very interested in what other people were doing.
Oh, that's actually really like, interesting that some roles care more about what the other people are than others.
Yeah.
Do, right?
Whereas like the Mormonger or the scientist would not care. At least if there's only one, they would not care. Because they just want to make sure that there is as high as they. Well, actually, I take that back. Now that we've added the specialist and the generalist and stuff, the Warmonger would want to make sure they win, but just enough so that the specialist and the generalist could not win.
Right, right. I think one of the things that I know some card games of this type have are, especially when they have things like roles and asymmetric character traits or goals, is mm-hmm. they have some in the, if it's your first time playing, play with these, then introduce these more difficult, more complicated mechanics. Not that they aren't all balanced, but that requires a little bit more familiarity with how the game works and basic strategies before using them. I don't know that, it seems like maybe that's the case here. I'm a little wary of like coming up with different versions of the game in that way. I would love to have a system that doesn't require that kind of, piece of instruction in the rule book. And so maybe that's a case of like giving our sort of more boring roles something a little bit more interesting to do, or more ways to react when they find out when these sort of more specialist or specialized roles are at play.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think one game I might play in the meantime, before we do our next iteration, our next session of iteration on Roboston, is the game Coup. Have you guys played that before?
C-O-U-P? I've played it.
Oh, yeah. I hate that game.
You hate that game?
I hate it so much.
That game is only bluffing and it's only counter moves. So
that's why I hate
cooperative element.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the difference that Stephen, you were talking about, like the difference between like a bluffing game and a deduction game. Mm-hmm. Right. And I like diplomacy style games, I like 4X games where you're trying to negotiate with other players and you may not tell them everything you know or tell them exactly what you're going to do. But I think that there's a line that gets crossed with me when it just becomes a game where you just straight out lie about what's true. And I hate those games. But this game does invite some of that. And I'm not against that happening here. It's just, I'm not the prime customer for it, I guess. But that's,
Well, I like playing Coup. I don't like playing it over and over again. It's just not a game that I think has lots of like long-standing legs for me, but it also doesn't seem to be designed to do that.
That's true.
Where you play just like, you know, hours and hours of it. But I do like that. I mean, that bluffing strategy with different roles, there is an element of that in Robustin.
Yeah.
Emerging as a part of the fun. And so I think I might play Coup a couple of times with some folks to see, just think about how those bluffing dynamics work and how they're, you know, how the counter moves work, because there might be something for us to learn there. Even though that's not what we're trying to make this game into.
Right.
Yeah. Even having like more actions, I think might help with that. And Coup has a bunch of actions that we could maybe borrow, quote unquote, for our game.
But also more things that could give up what role you are, like more mechanics that might reveal. Because what I really like about what we've done here is that when I choose a card to play, which is really my main agency in the game, I might want to choose this one because it reaches my goal better, but I might not want to choose it because it reveals my role. And I think if we have more mechanics that give players a lot of power, a lot of agency to complete their goal at the cost of making it suddenly very difficult to reach their goal in future turns because everybody will know what they're up to, then that gives players a lot of that risk reward that I love so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember what game there was that we were playing in the past, but like there was like a social deduction lying game or whatever, and like you could reveal your role at any point. And you get some special bonus, but then like everybody knows who you are at that time.
Oh, right. It'd be like a power move to be like, you know, you pull off the mask and you're like, ha, it was me the whole time.
But like as a result of that, you know, everybody knows it was you the whole time. And so in future rounds or future sessions, then they'll know that like Steven wants to sabotage. So we'll play around that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think like having that information helps you make better decisions. Having that information helps you make better decisions because you know how other people are going to want to try to win.
Yeah.
You don't know what their cards are, but you can figure out what, how they're going to play their cards.
Right. Right,
generally speaking. I guess at any point, like somebody could be, as the scientist, they could be, we've got enough intelligence at this point. I'm just going to put whatever I want down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I guess that would be bad.
Well, I want to motivate players to keep their role a secret mechanically as long as possible.
Yeah.
And I think and I think the way to do that actually is to make the co-op goal much more important than it is now. And if that means more than just those threshold numbers, but some other thing, or maybe it's when you build the robot, then the robot needs to do something, or you know, which I think I was against when we were talking early on. I kind of like the game being over immediately, but almost to have more to do co-op, I think, because I'm still, because the thing I said before the break that I still feel really strongly about is I think other than just telling players that you have this primary goal, there's no reason for them to feel that it's primary. And I think that we, as playtesting it, we kind of just took it as read, but I could see people approaching the game and never, and like, why would I bother? Like, you know, just because the rules say so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The rules have to enforce that in some capacity, and I don't think we have that yet. But that would also do Stephen what you were saying, which is to prevent that sort of it keep players from just being like, bah, who cares about if they know what role I am, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've kind of resolved it. We're gonna keep at this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, listeners who enjoy our Nice Games Jam episodes, you can stay tuned for a little mini series. We don't know how many of these we're going to do, but at least one more, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But Ellen, you laid out our next step is let's get this on Tabletop Simulator so we can actually have a little bit, a different environment, a little bit more robust environment to get this working in.
Yeah. I was going to say, we should try to bring in an external playtester on our Tabletop Sim build.
Yeah. Well, let's get a guest on board for that episode, the next episode for sure.
Yeah.
And then Stephen, we have our deck of cards. I don't know if you want to take a peek at that. I know you like numbers.
I do like numbers so much. I'll take a peek at those.
Because right now we still have a disconnect between like our three stats, offense, defense, intelligence, and that they have really little to do with if it's a head, a limb, or body. And maybe we're okay with that. I don't know that I want to totally balance the game around just making sure all the numbers line up. I'd love a little more thematic connection. I want like a limb could be a weapon. It could be a projectile weapon or an axe. Like, and that would have a different, like, I'd love to have a more interesting sets of things than just numbers. But that's not homework. That's just going to have to be worked out, next time.
Yeah, for sure. That's our show. Check out our website, nicegames.club, for show notes and links to resources on today's topics. If you like this episode, give us a review on your favorite podcast app and tell your friends. Independent podcasts like ours need word of mouth to grow. We love hearing from our listeners. For a quick way to give us feedback on the show, head over to nicegames.club/feedback and fill out a short little form. You can also get in touch with your nice hosts on Twitter at nicegamesclub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and cats getting daily exercise. I swear, this is a good video. Y'all should look at this. It's great. Or you can email us through contact@nicegames.club. Ask us questions, suggest topics, or just say hello.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Okay, so we do a cut here then, is the idea.
Yeah, or I mean, we can just leave the recording running, but
we'll see if anything comes out of it.
But yeah.
All right, okay. So let's get the stats on the current cards then. Let's do it. And do all that noise. And we'll just record lots of unusable audio right now, but that's great.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.